What helps? What helps? These two words may be intoned as a question, to which the answer may be something like getting enough sleep or sitting regularly. Or alternatively, the words may indicate the start of a statement. What helps is... And that ambiguity in the title of this Everyday Zen and this talk, the ambiguity is intentional because I didn't want to arouse in you the expectation that any one of us had all the answers or all the questions, but to make it clear from the outset that this is an opportunity for us to explore this whole topic. Of course, in the context of a Zen Group of Western Australia Everyday Zen event, I'm assuming that this is practice related. What helps us to maintain a lively practice? Does our practice help us to live well? And if so, how? And if not, why not? How can we help? Many of us have been motivated to take up Zen because we thought it would help us. Does this mean that Zen is a form of self-help? Well, Zen practice can certainly help us, but it is not exactly self-help. In actuality, it is helpful, but not in the way that is designed to win friends and influence people, though it may accidentally do that. It's important to realize this. Many people have been disappointed at times because Zen practice does not always give us a warm and comforting fuzzy feeling, guarantee longevity, enduring relationships, or ensure that we never experience disappointment or grief. I suspect I didn't need to spell this out. All of you have been practicing for some time. Know only too well that we all get sick or miserable at times, that friends and family members get sick or die. We experience disappointment, loneliness, anger, and ill health. We may have heard Yuen Mendes' famous words to his assembly, "I don't ask you about before the 15th day, try to say something about after the 15th day." Yuen Men himself answered for everyone, "Every day is a good day." Yes, of course, Yuen Men knew full well that there are days that don't seem good. The day when we suffer the death of a child or lose a parent, when we get a diagnosis of some terminal disease, or lose our job, or get evicted from our house, or break up with a partner. And even if we haven't been suffering personally from major events of this kind, we know that our world is under pressure. More fracking is being done, more tons of fish are being netted, more native forests are being cut down, more people are struggling to survive as water resources become scarcer, while elsewhere, arable land is inundated. Even if we ignore the climate issues, there are geopolitical tensions, increasing corporate power at the expense of workers worldwide, and artificial intelligence is increasingly insinuating itself into our lives by stealth. I'm sure you don't need me to go on. We all know that there are always reasons galore for us to feel that today, or any other day, is not a good day. I suspect there's a lot of people affected by the flooding of that dam that was blown up in Ukraine, feeling that this isn't a very good day today. But... you know, we all know that there are always reasons for us to feel that today isn't a good day. And let's face it, we can think we're having a bad day because of something comparatively trivial. We just spent 1 hour and 17 minutes on hold waiting to talk to our electricity supplier or whatever. Yuen Men was, of course, pointing to a wider sense of who we are. We often are overwhelmed by our feelings, so that it is our current fear or anger or desire or even boredom that seems to define us. Yet our thoughts and feelings are not who we really are. We need to realize this. It is at the core of our practice. How do we do this? What helps? Our Zen practice, our koans or shikantaza or breath counting, are all ways that in formal practice we start to notice and let go of the tight grip of our habitual self-focused thoughts. Instead of focusing on how our knees ache, or how unreasonable our boss is, or whether we need to go on a diet, we hear the sound of a passing plane, or smell the burning incense, and are present to this. Just this. Mirror mind. But what helps us to do this? What helps us to do this each day? Do we do it each day? And does this extend into our lives? How? I think all of us here today are here because we know or suspect that Zen practice helps, but how do we help ourselves and others with this? Are there, for example, ways that we can integrate our practice more fully into our lives so that the relative calm and ease, the less reactive awareness we may experience while sitting, is more attainable at other times too? This exploration of how we can help ourselves and each other in our practice is perhaps particularly pertinent right now, because we know that Ross Bolota Roshi is retiring. Ross has been the resident teacher here for several decades. He was already teaching as a sensei when I arrived here in 1992. Then he received transmission in 1997 and continued teaching here until he gave transmission to Ian Sweetman in 2000, when I was actually away at that time when that happened. And he took over teaching here while Ross continued to teach and supervise teachers elsewhere in Australia and New Zealand. Then in 2012, Ross returned to teaching regularly here. Since 2013, the year before my transmission, I have co-taught here with Ross at his invitation. Now, 10 years later, he has announced his retirement, so that for the first time in 30 years, there will not be a resident teacher. Of course, you will all miss him at regular sitting nights and may wonder how you will manage without him. But please bear in mind that for many years, Zen students all over Australia, including me and quite a few of you, sat without any resident teacher. Aitken Roshi and later John Tarrant Roshi made annual visits to Sydney and Perth. During those years, students themselves organised Sangha activities, gave talks, held discussion nights, often focused on a text such as a sutra, and so on. Sometimes people would remain after sitting to talk over a cup of tea. The Dharma was alive. It can be very empowering to take responsibility for our Sangha activities. This is not just about formal Sangha events either, but encouraging each other in our practice, helping keep Sangha involved and active. While, in our tradition, formal teaching is important, doing things to support others ourselves instead of just waiting for a teacher to validate our practice is also the way. Doing leadership for Sesshin and Zazenkai, as well as on regular sitting nights, and being on council also helps everyone. It is vitally important that these activities are not always left to the same few people. However, the primary focus of this year's Everyday Zen is not the organisation of Segwa activities, but what helps us to walk the Bodhisattva path. It is a broad path. Nothing and no one is excluded. The intentions of the Bodhisattva vows, our great vows, are clear. The many beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Greed, hatred, and ignorance rise endlessly. I vow to abandon them. Dharma gates are countless. I vow to wake to them. Buddha's way is unsurpassed. I vow to embody it fully. So how do we live these vows that are directed towards awakening and compassion, not only for our own benefit, but for that of all beings? For example, we probably know only too well that greed, hatred, and ignorance rise endlessly. But how do we abandon them? Moreover, while we may abandon them relatively easily in the depth of Sesshin, we may not. People can become enraged at someone walking too slowly or too fast or with the wrong facial expression in Kinhin, or feel irritation when there is little food left in the serving bowl when they go to get it. Even more in our everyday lives, we may find ourselves being endlessly and often obliviously swayed by our desires and aversions. Indeed, it's normalized in our culture. What are Twitter or Sky News other than mediated ways to get us worked up about something? Liking this, not liking that. What are glossy magazines, hoardings, TV advertisements other than ways to make us want and hopefully buy something, anything? Not only that, but so often they create in us a sense of self, a fantasy better self that can be enhanced even more with the help of the right accessories. Yet I trust that you are savvy enough to be aware of this and to remain unswayed by the subtle and not so subtle ways in which modern media is designed to keep us perpetually wanting something more, something else, something that will finally make us happy and contented. So, during the coming days, whether you are enrolled in Everyday Zen or not, I invite you to pay particular attention to what helps. This may include identifying what you have found helpful yourself and what ways you may be helpful to others. In particular, this is about what helps us in our practice, but it's also about how both supporting others and being supported in our practice also helps us in our lives. One Sunday recently, I was watching Compass about Julie McCrossan, the former ABC radio personality who co-hosted Life Matters on Radio National for many years. She had been a radical lesbian feminist in the days pre-1984, when homosexuality was illegal in New South Wales. And she was also a committed Christian, which was an uneasy combination at that time. In her early life, she was an activist for gay rights, understandably very angry, and increasingly aware she drank way too much, which made her even angrier. So she stopped drinking. "I was a very angry person in the early years of university, and I drank too much. And fundamental to not drinking at all, you need a kind of spiritual transformation. It's not just a physical thing, giving up drinking." She spoke of the pressure, the social pressure, the after-works drinks on a Friday, and so on. Our society is all about alcohol, she continued, and went on to say again, so there is a spiritual dimension. I should point out here that it was clear from the programme that being accepted as she was, as a lesbian, in the spiritual community, was an essential aspect of her spiritual life. And this really struck me, the way that so many people, including people we think of as professionally and personally successful, have personal difficulties that we don't necessarily know about. Addictions to substances or activities like sex or gambling, or mental health issues, trauma. And so the support of a sangha, whether it's a church congregation or the equivalent in any spiritual tradition, can be a very significant source of support. I'm not suggesting that we need to know about an individual person's particular demons, unless they choose to confide in us. Just that it helps to be aware that we all grapple with something. When we vow to abandon greed, hatred, and ignorance, which stand in for and include all other self-referencing tendencies, it is because these are universal human problems, and we all have to deal with them all the time. What I'm suggesting is that most people who take up a spiritual path, including Zen, do so because they know they have some difficulties and believe that such a path may help. I know I thought that. I remember asking if I could see Yamada Roshi at a time when I was feeling lost and miserable in Japan, and probably hoping to tell him all about it and seek his advice. The message came back that he couldn't see me. But a few days later, a big brown envelope was delivered by Paul Shepherd, who was a senior student of his and his translator. And it contained what I now realize must have been some of his encouragement talks. I remember reading them and thinking, this man can read my mind. He knows me exactly. He understands my problems. How can he do that when he has never spoken to me? Yes, I really thought he was a magical being. So after that, I went along to his dojo and undertook the quite rigorous training we had to do before being allowed to take part in the Zazenkai or Seshin. Here I still am. You know, at that time, the focus in Kamakura was on Kensho, an awakening experience. And everyone worked really hard to try to attain that. But really, as Yamada Roshi kept telling us, that was only the beginning of practice. The real goal was the perfection of character. I realize now that I didn't even know what that meant in those days. I saw Yamada Roshi as a somewhat intimidating old man who smoked a pipe, liked classical music, gave baffling but intriguing talks on koans, and rang me out of the doksan room after about 10 seconds when I failed to answer the question, what is mu? I did not see then his endless generosity and dedication. I didn't realize then what he was giving me. And, as most of you know, I met his most senior American student, Bob Aitken. Not yet Robert Aitken Roshi. I met Bob Aitken there, and the rest, as they say, is history. This perfection of character was not much talked about in those days. I assumed that it was something that would just happen of its own accord if we kept sitting. To some extent it does, but I think it is helped to a huge degree by sharing time together with others who walk this path. I'm deliberately being both vague and specific here. I don't think that we should expect or want everyone in the Sangha to share our interests, socio-political views. We don't have to be friends with everyone in our Sangha. However, I think it's safe to assume that most people who take up this practice find it helps to practice with others that it supports our own practice to sit as a group, listen to talks, have precepts nights and so on, as well as Zazen Kyan Sesshin. And when we do not have a resident teacher, we can still do all those other activities. I didn't know when I started planning this Everyday Zen that Ross Bolita Roshi was going to announce his retirement beforehand. Yet I had already decided to have what helps as a theme. I'm continually helped in my practice by others. They may not even know that they are helping. I'm helped by some books. I'm helped by people who tell me about books they have found useful. I'm helped by conversations with other people, some of whom are also Zennies, but many others who are not. I'm helped by people who are being helpful and by those who are not. What I notice is that several of the people I regularly interact with share a wish to lead good lives. I don't mean the good life, the hedonistic life of pleasure-seeking that many aspire to, but a life that's a good life in the more Aristotelian sense. It's been said that perhaps the most famous theory of the good life comes from Aristotle, who proposed that the good life is one of virtue and morality. In other words, a good life is one where you strive to be kind and ethical in all your actions. Well, virtue and morality were not the first words that sprung to mind in association with Zen when I first encountered it, at least in theory. Kerouac's book, The Dharma Bums, a sort of must-read for the young post-beat would-be hippie Zen aspirants, combined some moral Christian angst with a fair bit of Buddhist-inspired free love, and much of the discussion among my university friends about Zen focused on the promise of a mind-altering experience that was reputedly better than any of the chemical mind-altering substances that were popular then. However, when I actually took myself off to my first ever session in the UK, the reality was very ascetic and cold, both emotionally and physically, and I did not persevere with Zen at that time. Apart from my year in Japan, it was really here in Australia when Aitken Roshi first came here to teach soon after I'd arrived from the UK and I began studying under him, that I started to understand much more about Zen ethics and to enjoy being regularly involved in the Sangha. And it was regularly meeting with the Sangha, both formally and informally, that made a big difference. Since that time in the late 1970s, there is so much more available to help us. There were very few translations of even the most basic Zen texts at that time. Now, many texts have been translated as English-speaking Zen practitioners have multiplied. Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Shunryu Suzuki was one of the first popular Zen books to come out in English in 1970, just a year before Suzuki Roshi died. Aitken Roshi's book, Taking the Path of Zen, was published in 1980. These days, if you want to read about Zen, there are hundreds of books available. This also helps. There are also, as I know you are aware, blogs and websites and talks galore on the internet. And I know that many of you find them helpful. Nevertheless, when push comes to shove, it is often what arises unbidden and unexpectedly in our lives, as well as our formal practice, that most helps us sustain a lively practice. Over the coming days, let's explore this. And even if you're not participating in EDZ, you can still do that yourself. Thank you for your attention. And now, if there's time, we can have questions, comments.